Hey, welcome to the Rima Klale Life and Faith Podcast, a long-form podcast designed to help you thrive in your life as well as in your faith.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the podcast. So grateful that you're here. So grateful you've taken time out of your week, or your day, your moment in this life to be able to listen to the podcast. It's a great privilege to be in your earphones or on your loudspeaker as you do chores around the house. I realize that, you know, even for me as I listen to podcasts, that sure, it's actually quite an experience that we really get to know people as we journey. And so thank you for listening. And I pray and hope that, and I actually believe that this episode will be helpful to you as you try to thrive in life as well as in your faith. Because today I'm honored to have a great friend of mine who has been on the podcast before. I'll link to that in the show notes. He was one of the first few interviewees on the podcast. I should have actually known what episode that was, but it was early, very early on in the podcasting game. Yeah. We had a great long-winded conversation. In fact, when we celebrated a year of the podcast, his name was one of the names that was mentioned as one of the favorite episodes for people who listen to the podcast. So without further ado, Jared Zepeda Luna, welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Thanks, man. Thanks. I appreciate that. I'm such a privilege to be back with you.
Yeah, man. Come on. Dude, can you quickly give us a brief update as to where you are? Obviously, I think the last time you were on the podcast, maybe about 12 months or so ago now, maybe 14 months ago. But yeah, if you can give the people a bit of a brief of where you are now, what it is that you're doing and what you're involved with, and then we'll dive into a conversation for the day.
Sure. Yeah, I kind of went down the grid a little bit because my wife, she's a medical doctor, and she had the community service year that she has to work for the government in a rural area. So we moved to the Northwest province, and we're living in a little small town in the middle of nowhere, very deserty, very alone. Nobody ever knows about it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Even if I tell you the name, I don't think people will recognize this town. So obviously that implied some changes for me. So I used to do ministry in the Port Elizabeth Church of Christ in the town known as Quebeja now. But now I obviously do a lot of things online. I teach for a Bible school in Mexico, and I am still involved in ministry, in preaching and teaching in some churches and stuff. But most of what I do is serve my wife. I'm the house husband who cooks and cleans and does all these kinds of things. But I'm also studying at the same time. I'm studying in Rocky Mountain School of Ministry and Theology, and I'm studying a master's in divinity. So that's kind of what I'm up to.
Nice. I like that job description, house husband. I should propose that to Bali and see how that goes. But dude, that is very cool. Yeah, I think for those who maybe are South African are very interested, the town's name is Delarevo. And I didn't know it. When you mentioned it, I was like, yeah, great. It sounds like South Africa. That's as much as I knew about the little spot. But obviously, like you mentioned, it's obviously changed and shaped a lot of what it is that you're able to do now. And I kind of want to start there because you are, if I think about it, one of the few people that I know that are almost like a modern day televangelist. We might say more of an internet evangelist. But tell us about that experience, dude. How's it been kind of trying to minister online, trying to do lessons and teach online? I know you obviously teach for a Bible school online. How does all of that kind of feel? Because obviously we've all been pushed onto online due to COVID and stuff, and it can, you know, have different effects on different people.
It's hard, eh? It's very difficult. I don't know how televangelists did it before, but for me, it's ministry is about people. So the fact that I don't get to be around people makes it really difficult. So preaching to a camera is not the same as preaching to an audience. Sure. Even when you're preaching over Zoom, most people have their names. They don't really show their faces. Yeah, so it still doesn't feel very much different. And then you don't get to interact with people. All you hear is feedback later on. So it's a bit hard, honestly. I think it's been really difficult. And I think maybe I just don't have the right personality for it, but I don't think I fit it for that. I don't think this year I did ministry well through that, if I'm honest. I think I could have done better. Maybe my personality type fits more the in-your-face, hanging out every day kind of ministry. But this has been really tough.
Sure. And what's been the most challenging part? Is it just the inability to connect with people on a regular physical basis?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's part of it. It's hard not to connect with people, but I think it's hard because we are the church in Port Elizabeth is a small church, so we have very little resources compared to the amount of resources that are out there from big churches that are competing voices for an audience. So it often feels like you're making no difference because people are hearing all of these different voices, all of these different messages, all of these different podcasts or sermons or Instagram videos or whatever, and and yours is like a tiny little fraction of that. So you can't compete with that. And I didn't try to compete, but it was hard to notice that you were not really making a impact or a difference the way that you would wish for.
Sure. Okay. Wow. That I think that definitely does sound challenging. It's interesting. I know we're going to talk about a number of things, but you've mentioned something there, and you said you didn't compete. But if I ask you honestly, does it feel like a little bit of a competition? Like when you think about you know what you're trying to put online, whether it's sermons, podcasts, you know, videos. I know you had a whole Instagram page with a lot of teaching on there. Does it feel like a competition? And then why do you think it feels like a competition?
It does. It definitely does. I say I didn't compete because I didn't put all my energy and effort to try to make it or have more views or likes than next church or next influencer or whatever. Mm-hmm. I just did what I thought was reasonable and then let it happen from there. So that's what I mean by I didn't compete. I didn't put all my eggs in this basket. But it does feel like a competition. It does feel like people do not listen to preachers or to leaders at churches as much as they listen to influencers on Instagram. Mm-hmm. So it feels like even as a leader in ministry, you're competing for their ear. Mm-hmm. So you might say something that you think they need in their lives because you are walking with them, you're discipling them, and then they hear this influencer say the opposite and they're like, no, I think we're gonna do this, or I think I'm gonna go for that. And you're like, man, this person has no idea what you're going through, and and you're listening to them, and I'm trying to listen to you every day, and I really been praying for you. And it does feel like a competition.
That is an interesting phenomenon, because and I don't know if I've shared this on the podcast before, but I've been preaching in person to people and had people like Google stuff that I'm saying, whether it was facts that I was saying or what have you. But even like you're saying, where people are like, no, but I heard so-and-so say, and it's like, but you have no relation with so-and-so. Like the fact that we can even have this dialogue obviously changes things. So talk to me about that. Like, how do you... For you, I'm going to talk first to you as a leader. How do you feel like, you know, young people who are leading, whether it's they're helping lead a friend to Christ or helping lead in serving some ministry somewhere around the world, how do you feel like they can not get caught up in the competition but still have influence over the people that are in their ministry or in their kind of group, to be able to influence them in a culture where, man, there's just so much popularity and fame that's driving this idea of being able to influence people.
I totally hear you, and I get the example you were using. I've seen that so often that when I'm preaching, people just grab their phones and fact check everything I say. So you're absolutely right. I think the key of what your question was is, how do you help a friend? And for me, that has been the life-changing thing. When you are true friends with people, true friends with people, I think you care about them and they care about you, and they feel like you care for them in a way that is, I don't know, different and unique. So I kind of changed my role this year, and I stopped thinking, hey, I'm leading these people, and I just was like, hey, let me try to be their friend. And a friend that really cares, and I pray they feel like I'm their friend, so that they take my advice, or they call me when they're in need like they would to a friend. Not because, oh, he's the leader, so we need to tell him, or he's the leader, so he's going to tell me to do this and stuff like that. So I think friendship has been, for me, the changer, the key.
I think I'm like, man, that's good advice for me. I need to keep to hear that, because it is such a... it is such an interesting space in which we live because there is so much content out there, right? Mm-hmm. There is so much, I mean, people, everyone is preaching something. People who aren't in full-time ministry have platforms now. Yeah. It's quite an interesting dynamic that we live in because there is so much access to information. One guy I was listening to was saying how we've gone from a complicated world into a complex world, that now each individual has a set of thinking, a way of thinking, a set of beliefs that they can hold on to. But I love what you're saying in that, no, actually, it's the real authentic relationships that are going to be able to help people mm-hmm. the most, that are mm-hmm. going to be able to kind of drive change and influence people the most. So how would you say you develop those? Because obviously we live again in the technological age and people connect and chat and do things a lot online, especially with different varying levels of lockdown, depending on where you are in the world. But how do you develop a space in which people feel like, man, this person really genuinely cares about me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I often say that everybody and their mother got a YouTube channel this year or last year.
Yeah.
Everybody has some sort of content that they're trying to do or produce or listen to or be part of. So, yeah, it's so much out there. But to your question, Reams, is I think you can't do it with everybody. Mm-hmm. I think every single one of us has a capacity and a limit. And if it's one person, let it be that person. If it's 10 people, be the 10 people, but genuinely care about this person like you would care for your best friend, and develop that. And friendships, we all know how friendships work because we all have friends. Sure. We just don't think about it because it just becomes so natural. But if we look honestly, what is an ingredient that every friendship has? We spend time, you talk, you hang out, you do things, and you're intentional about it. It's not like, oh, whenever it happens. You call that person, let's go to the movies, let's go to the beach, you intentionally spend time with that person. Mm-hmm. Then the second thing that every friendship has is that I think there's this level of common interest that pulls you together. Even if you disagree about certain things, there's something that brings you together. Mm-hmm. And then I think true friendships, or the best friendships in my opinion, is the ones where you have shared like vulnerability or shared difficulty, where you go through hard things together and that person cries with you or listens to your heartbreak or goes through the tough times with you. Those are friendships that we keep forever. So I think if we're intentional, we try to find a common interest that we both can agree on, and we are vulnerable or listen to other people's vulnerabilities, I think you can develop a cool friendship with somebody and help them thrive in their life, in their faith, or they can help you.
Sure.
And you can find that wherever. I don't think it necessarily has to be in the specific place where you assume it would be. Can be anywhere.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, because I was going to ask then, if those are the three things, I feel like, you know, I can spend time with someone over Zoom or video calls or, you know, WhatsApp calls, common interests. We can figure that stuff out online. And then, vulnerability, I can share vulnerably over a call. And I'm thinking of our friendship, that in a lot of ways, man, that's a lot of how our friendship has developed over the last probably 18 months or so. And so, you know, so then one might argue then that's an argument for the technology. That's an argument for the platforms.
It is. And actually, if you think about it, most people have friendships with people outside of their local environment. Mm-hmm. When you ask somebody, who are your best friends, they often mention people that are not there in their lives every single day, that they don't see every week, that they talk to on the phone or on Zoom or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And you have to ask yourself why that is. Why is it easier to connect with somebody that doesn't see me every day than it is? Then it is harder to connect with somebody that I'm spending time in real time physically. Mm-hmm. So I think there's something there. Maybe we're just more technologically inclined. Maybe it's just easier to be vulnerable with somebody that's outside. Mm-hmm. But I think there might be a part of it where we have just kind of forgotten how to develop friendships with people right here now. And I think that's a problem. So we go to the comfortable, easier things. Because somebody that you're walking with every day sees your flaws, sees your mistakes, and sees your triumphs far more than somebody who is outside that you have to call over Zoom to catch up with. Sure. This person is looking at you and seeing you and being like, hey, Jared, hey, Remo, I noticed the way you talked to your wife. Mm-hmm. That wasn't okay.
Yeah.
Your friend over Zoom is not going to see that unless you tell him. But I don't think most of us will share, hey, I mistreated my wife today.
Sure. Yeah, I think we're getting into some good stuff here. Because I do, again, I want to be clear. I may play devil's advocate, but I'm trying to wrestle with this stuff just the same, right? Because on one level, for the church that I'm in, I am the campus minister. There isn't another campus minister. So there are pressures that I feel, there are conversations that I'm in, there's decisions that I have to make, that even with, we've had an intern on staff, I've got really some great guys that I've been able to develop friendships with where I'm at. But even with those things being said, we're not necessarily in the same zone and can't necessarily talk peer-to-peer about it, especially, let me say, the common interest of ministry. But when I look at across the pond or even up the road, you know, 18-odd hours to get to you from where I am. But when I look at our friendship, I feel like, man, but Jarrett and I really are, like, this is a really great friendship, right? So somewhere, one would say, yeah, but you don't understand, Jarrett. You know, in my city, I don't have people like me. In my church, my local church, I don't have people like me. So how does one grapple with, on the one hand, man, I feel like there's this tension of, but I feel more connected and able to get time with people online better than those that are in my personal ministry or church that I'm involved in. But at the same time, how do I fight to develop the depth of friendship required in the local church to be able to help me thrive in life and faith? Because I don't think, you know, just having people online and trying to do this thing alone is the answer either. So how does one wrestle that tension?
Yeah, but it is better than nothing. I mean, when my wife and I moved here, we didn't have a church community that we could plug into because this is like a ghost town. There's almost nobody here. So only patients that my wife sees. So we had to seek out, and the only way to seek out those relationships was online. So we wish there was another couple like you and Pali that we could see and have dinner with every week and hang out and go to the beach or go and do this or whatever. Sure. That would be optimal. That would be the best. I wish we had that. Sure. But it is better than just being by ourselves. So we contacted a couple of couples and we were like, hey, we need you guys to call us every month and we want to be super open and super vulnerable. But you have to choose it. You have to choose to be that level of God level honest, that vulnerability where you do not hide, because Zoom can hide so many things.
Sure.
You can say, hey, I'm spending time with God. I'm thriving in my faith. I'm thriving in my marriage. We're doing good. Tick the box. Next month, you call, same story, but between the first call and the second call, so many things went down that only somebody that it's there could see. So your question was, so what's the tension and what would you do for the person that feels like there's nobody in their local community, in their local church where they can connect with? Amen. Seek for somebody that is out there that you can connect with, but be very, very honest with yourself and be very, very honest with that person. Are you truly being God level honest? But then if you're in a church community, I'm sure there's one. Sure. I'm sure there's just one person that you can find something. And it might be at different life stages, hey? I found sometimes some of my best friends in the church in PE were not people my age doing ministry, were people who are 12, 15 years older than me, who I could really connect with, and I felt really safe around them. So I don't know, maybe it doesn't look exactly like we wish it was, but I think it's there. And I think when we ask God, honestly, we pray and we say, hey, Lord, I feel a bit alone. I need some friends. He can be our friend, first of all. I don't know how many times we think of God as our friend.
Sure.
But then he also provides friends. I believe he does.
Yeah, sure. No, that's good. I think there is a and what I hope people always hear, because I'm a big believer in hybrid. So, you know, I believe that there's great room and there's potential and promise online. But I also think there is incredible power in person, you know, and the greatest analogy I've heard is kind of, it's like online dating, right? You meet, if you went on a Tinder, and I'm not advising go on Tinder, I'm just saying if you did that, I want to be clear on that before I get quoted as Remo has suggested I go on Tinder. But you know, if you go on Tinder and then you meet the person, you can never be married to the person because you just chat on the Tinder app. Yeah, right? It moves from Tinder to maybe a WhatsApp, then you Facebook stalk them or Instagram stalk them, because we know we do that. But then eventually it leads to meeting them in person, right? And again, yeah. I may be referring to our friendship because you're coming down to Cape Town in a couple of weeks from now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but that's what it is. Like, we've actually kept up a lot online, a lot on WhatsApp, a lot on WhatsApp calls. Yeah. But this week, like, you know, when you're down here, whatever the dates are, I'm like, yes, let's go. Like, you know, we actually get to sit down and have the 4-hour long coffee and have you rebuke me in person. So it feels like there is a good need for the balance, right?
Yeah.
But what I want to drill down into a little bit more is, you said we've actually maybe gotten out of the, we don't know how to have the level of gut level honest conversation in person anymore. And there's a great leader that I like to listen to who's talking about the art of conversation is dying, that people don't know how to have a back and forth dialogue that we used to as people before technology came about. So first, if you hear that, you know, kind of what are the first thoughts that come to your mind, and then if you had to think about developing those kind of real conversations and times with people, how does one do that?
No, I absolutely agree. I think there's a massive difference between you and I being friends, catching up on call, and you and I being friends and hanging out physically, like catching a Manchester United game together and talking about it real time. Like, those are moments that are very different than just talking about it later or calling up later about it. So it's those little things that really build commonality.
Yeah.
But I think what whoever this author was, I don't know, remember the name, but that we're losing conversation, the art of having conversation. I think it's true. I think we have gotten so used to doing things online, and we speak to each other online in ways we would never do physically. My wife was talking about trolls the other day, how trolling became a thing online, and nobody has the guts to ever do that in person. I've never met somebody who just rocks up to your face and tells you how horrible you are and how ugly you are and how terrible you are just randomly and leaves. But the internet allows for that. So I think we just become like a different person online than we are physically. So I definitely think my first thought is, yeah, this guy is right. We're losing the art of having conversations face to face.
And so why the difference? Do you think we're inherently evil and the internet is bringing the evil out of us? Like why the difference? Why don't we walk up to random people and say, sure, that outfit's terrible, you should try again? You know, why don't we do that?
Because we're not terrible, because we're not inherently evil. Because if you see somebody's face to your words and your hurtful like comments, you feel some type of way. You don't want to see this person cry or get offended, or sometimes we're afraid, like, what if this person is stronger than me and they react in a way that I'm gonna be harmed? But on the internet, no, I don't see reactions. I don't see how this person is receiving the message. All I get to do is put what I want to put out there, irregardless of people's feelings and reactions and how it might land with them. And I feel better. So I definitely think it's safer to have relationships online. It requires less vulnerability. It requires less of me being completely honest in front of you. I can lie a little bit more online.
Yeah. And I don't want to belabor the point, but I think that's the issue for me, is we actually are able to hide a whole lot better. But also we're able to fake it. And I know this is probably a terrible segue, but we're able to fake it. And I feel like sometimes even those who we allow influence, quote unquote, within the space of like Christianity, and we're talking specifically in that world. And I think there's people who do this in everything, right? Anti-vax now is a big deal.
Yeah.
I feel like people are influencing that thought, and some of them are uneducated people. We've seen what's happened in the US with all sorts of examples. I think the US, unfortunately, gets spread on our TV screens, but I've been watching some of what's happening in China, some of what's happening in Australia, and it's quite interesting to see how people, because of what they can do behind a keyboard, can drum up all sorts of support. And so I want to talk to you about this idea of the influencer culture, or being an influencer, or trying to influence culture. And so first and foremost, if you had to think of that term, what do you feel like that is? What did you define an influencer as?
Okay. So obviously the first thing that comes to my mind is the people that make millions of rands telling you about the specific makeup that they wear and why you should wear it. So that's the first thing that comes to my mind, you know, the Instagram influencer. But I do not think of influencers in that way for myself. Mm-hmm. I do not think that they coined the term, but that's not necessarily what it should be. I think Christians were, in throughout church history, the influencers of culture and the influencers of humanity. Many, as long as a lot of people might disagree, but many of the things that you and I hold really valuable today, like education or healthcare or women advocating for women's rights, all that came from Christian thought, from people who read the Bible, who followed Jesus, and who said, hey, this has to change. And they influenced the culture to a way that it changed from within. So I think, honestly, that disciples of Jesus should be the biggest influencers everywhere. Influencers in their jobs, in their communities, in their friendships, and wherever. But I don't think we are, sadly. I think that voice was taken away from us, even though it should be us. And I think now the biggest influencers of culture are people in the media, people in the internet, people that have power and authority and shaping our narrative, shaping where we're going as humanity. And we agree with them for some reason. We take what they say and we're like, yeah, no, they're right. The TV shows we watch shape how we're going to interact with people. And if they say this is right, we'll do it.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. There's a lot to go into, but I want to start kind of where we just went from, which is this idea of what can be ingenuine or disingenuous. Mm-hmm. Like people can portray an image. And I've certainly been there, so I'm not shooting at anybody, but I can portray an image of spirituality and take pictures of my quiet time. But the quiet time was the 15 minutes it took for me to get the right angle on this picture and post that, if that makes sense. Or I can quote people. I mean, I've seen people quote people. And then I'm like, do you know the full work there? I don't know if you've seen on Instagram recently, or maybe about a month or two ago, a voice that was trending, or the sound clip that was trending in the reel section was the whole a jack of all trades, but a master of none, right? Yeah. That there's actually a full quote there. That quote is actually, it's a snippet of a longer quote, and I can't exactly remember how it goes, but basically the idea is rather a jack of all trades, you know, rather be a jack of something than be a master of nothing kind of thing. Yeah. As opposed to what we've now, modern day colloquialism says, you know, rather be a master of one, don't be a jack of all trades, because your quality will go down. And that was not what they were trying to convey. But that whole idea that we actually aren't going further and reading and doing the things that need to be done. Yeah. And I'm thinking of young people listening to this, and I'm thinking, man, how do we help create a culture that is not just influenced, but that does influence? And I think probably the first place I think to start is to become genuine, to actually be an authentic version of yourself. And when I think of you, that's what I think of. I think of, you know, Jared is going to be Mexico, you know, just oozing passion. Like, that's just who you're going to be. And I want to kind of ask, like, how have you created, how have you owned that and lived in that space for the years that you've lived in that space to be a genuine version of who you are?
Oh, that's a good question. Like, I have to think about that for a second. But I do think I agree with you in the sense that I think we should start with ourselves before trying to influence the whole world around us with Jesus's life and character and everything has to offer. I think we need to start with ourselves. I definitely think that's a deep point you're saying, Remo.
Sure.
But how do I don't know. I guess I was just raised in a certain way. I guess Jesus just means that much to me. I don't think I know the answer to that, but I can't fake what's going on with me and Jesus. I can't, because it's just not worth it. It's not worth it for me to put a face on for other people when inside that there's nothing going on.
Sure.
So I feel like I lose out and I miss out if I fake, if I'm not genuine, if I'm not authentic. So even when I pray, like, I do not fake it with God and say, okay, dear Heavenly Father, like, oh no, if I'm angry, I tell him, like, I'm angry. Mm. If I'm sad, I cry. If I feel lonely, I'm like, God, I can't hear you. I can't see you. I need you here right now. Mm. So maybe that's the answer. Sure. the fact that I can be so authentic with God in his presence enables me to be so authentic with other people.
Sure.
If I'm faking it with God, of course I'm going to fake it with other people.
Sure.
If I just say the prayers, the right prayers every now and then, of course I'm going to say the right words to the people asking me. It's just one thing leads to another.
Yeah. So how do I cultivate that? Because the truth is, some of us grew up in church. Some of us, we didn't grow up in church. We became Christians later on. But now I've been doing the same kind of thing for 10 years. So how do I cultivate, a going deeper and getting more and more authentic?
Yeah. Don't be afraid. I think it feels awkward at first, but don't be afraid. Most of us probably pray, and I don't know how you pray, but do you pray out loud? Do you pray like you would speak to Remo right now, like Remo speaking to Jared? We're having a conversation. Or do I just pray a list of things that I want God to do for me? Mm-hmm. So there's a big difference right there. A list of things is asking God to be kind of like a genie that helps me out in my life. Sure. But a relationship that goes deeper, like you're saying, it's a conversation that goes back and forth, back and forth. So speak out loud to God, or journal, or figure some way that you try your best to just speak to this person like you would speak to your friend if you were going out for coffee. Sure. And don't hold back. It feels awkward at first, maybe. You'll be like, who's really listening? Or am I allowed to say this? Or can I really go about it this way? I know it will feel awkward. But if you keep doing that, it's going to change you. It changed me. I do not raise my hands at church or go on my knees because I just want to seem spiritual. Sure. It's because that's what I do when I'm driving on the car listening to a song. Mm-hmm. So it just feels natural to do that at church.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't cry when I'm praying or preaching because I'm just trying to see spiritual in a platform. It's because I'm crying every day when I'm spending time with God. But if I'm not able to do those tears, like if I feel like I'm not safe enough to do those tears with him, man, I feel like we're hindering our relationship a lot. And I know a lot of people don't feel like they can do that. It feels awkward and it feels unsafe and it feels like God's not really listening. So I have people like that in mind, and I say, man, I'm sorry, and please don't be afraid. He wants to hear your tears. Mm-hmm. He wants to hear your laugh. He wants to hear all about you.
Yeah. Well, dude, I'm convicted because I think there is, there's a definite performance mentality, and I don't want to say it's the internet or cell phones or whatever, but there's definitely a fear in me that I've got to live up to a certain expectation. I've not people's expectation, God. I'm like, man, I better not mess up. I better not say the wrong thing. I better not do the wrong thing. And what I'm hearing you say is actually there's a need for, what does John say? Love drives out fear, right? Perfect love drives out fear.
Yeah.
There's a need for that ability to say, you know what? God loves me holistically, and he loves me perfectly because he's perfect, not because I'm perfect, because he's perfect. And because of that, I'm able to go to him genuinely. I saw you grabbing your Bible. I'm not sure what you want to give me, but hit it.
No. I was just hearing you speak, so I was like, oh, which verse he's going to talk about? So I was just going to go there.
Got you. Okay. Yeah, sorry. But that's just what came up on the top of my head. And I almost don't want to belabor the point, but how does one push past that? How does one push past the pretense and the fake? Like, how, if you had to think of one practical step that I could take today to get more real and more authentic with God, what would you think that is?
Sure. One practical step. I feel like you're asking me for like a silver bullet for something that does not exist, because every human is different. But I think if I could make a very general thing and then give practical examples, that might be better. The general thing is, how do you interact with your best friend?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of inhibitions you don't have? What kind of things you're not afraid to do? What kind of conversations you're not afraid to get into? That best of friend that you go deep and then you go shallow in 10 seconds.
Sure.
That you speak the most rough emotions, that you're angry, and that also you listen to like the soundest advice. That kind of relationship what is it that you do with that person that you feel you can't do with God? So then the practical is, for some, it might be like, hey, with my friends, I connect through music. So maybe play the ukulele or play the guitar and try to do connect with God that way. For some people might be like, hey, we go on walk. So go on a walk and talk. Or for some people might be like, hey, I just do manual labor and we just end up having great conversations. Then do a project manually and invite God into that project. The point for me is friendship. God wants to be your friend and the very best friend that you could possibly be. So interact with him the way you would interact with your best friend. And that, for me, is different than it is for everybody else. Yeah. For me, it's just being able to be incredibly emotional because I'm such an emotional person. So if I can do that with God, then my whole relationship with him changes.
Sure. Wow. Dude, that is good. That is good work. And yes, I was kind of looking for a silver bullet, but we'll take a bronze one. We'll take a bronze one. It's a pretty good bronze bullet. But dude, what I feel like you're talking about, even when you talk about inviting, you know, God into your workspace or your yeah. walk or these sorts of spaces, is I feel like yeah. you're talking about living a spirit-filled life, which yeah. is something that we've been able to talk about offline. And I thought, man, I want to yeah. really bring that conversation online. Cool. And so if you had to define living a spirit-filled life, what would yeah. you say that is?
So one of my greatest mentors, his name is James Henderson. He said this to me not too long ago. He said, Jared, we're so used to practicing our faith. This is what we're taught. Practice your faith. Practice your faith. Live out what you preach. And he said, what if you faith your practices? And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, bring faith into every practice that you do. So literally, in everything, he's teaching me. I'm learning. I'm not good at this, but I'm learning. Every morning, I open up the curtains of my house to let the sun in, right? Yeah. Every single day. It's something I practice every day. Mm-hmm. So I'm learning. I'm creating a habit that every time I open the curtains, I say a little short prayer. Because what else am I going to do? I have to open up the curtains anyways.
Sure.
So I just say to God, Lord, as I open the curtain to welcome the day, open my heart to welcome your word.
Sure. Okay.
Every morning I drink a little bit of water because water is really healthy in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I'm teaching myself to every time I drink water to just say a short prayer. God, as this water refreshes my body, may your presence refresh my soul in every little thing. Like, I haven't nailed it yet, but my mentor does that in every little practice of his day.
Sure.
And I want to get that, because then the awareness of God's presence and God's life is always around. And you start to feel like what you're saying, full of the Spirit, because you realize he's there in every single thing. So how would I say a spirit-full life is? The person who's full of the Spirit is the person that is aware that is Jesus always there. He's always next to you. He's always in you. He's always in front of you. He's always behind you. That awareness of his presence, I think, is, man, it's the key.
Sure. That's a good word. I mean, I feel like, you know, we can now end the podcast and go home and try practice that. Because like you say, it's you do those things every day. And I'm thinking about, for myself, the things I do every day. And I'm like, sure, a lot of things is easy to think, oh, this is not a God-centric thing. Whereas, like you say, you can actually faith your practices instead of just practicing, you know, your faith. So that is, that is incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. Something else that you've mentioned to me, which I think we've spoken about before on the podcast I think Ben Hutchins came on and spoke about this, is the idea of Sabbath. And in fact, you didn't just mention it to me. You rebuked me because I wasn't taking a Sabbath. And I, again, I'm not perfect at this either. But talk to me about Sabbath. What do you define Sabbath is, or what is it, and then why do you feel like people should be practicing it?
Because that's God's rhythm of life. I think that's why we should be practicing. God did not create us as machines to work all the time. Mm-hmm. God did not create us as labor producers that our identity is tied up to how much we produce. The story of the Bible begins with God creating everything, creating humans as the climax of his creation and then taking a day off so that he could spend time with them, sure. so that they could spend time with him. Is day six, God is like, yeah, this is awesome. Day seven, let's chill together. And sure. the entire thread of the Bible is going back to that seventh day rest where we are in harmony with God, we're in harmony with each other. We're just, yeah, we were created to rest, not to slave ourselves in working. But even in that rest, there's things to do. It's not like we're just going to be chilling, poking our eyes every day. So I think the idea of working from a place of rest then rather than working all the time so I can get rest, I think it's a very, very different mentality. So I think that's why we should take Sabbath. How do I define Sabbath? Sabbath is ceasing intentionally, stopping intentionally, almost to the point of inconveniencing myself because there's stuff to do, mm-hmm. but I need to put that away so I can remember two things. One, that God is in charge of time, not me. Mm-hmm. And two, that my identity does not depend or is not tied up to what I produce or how much I work. So it's that intentional stop to remind myself of the two most important things God wants me to hear every day or every week. I think I am answering your questions. Let me know no, if I've missed something.
No, you're doing great. You're doing great, brother. This is good stuff. And why the identity piece? Why do you feel like that needs to be reshaped?
Because we tied up our identities to what we do so often. So often, Remo. I mean, how many athletes have not tied up their identities to their sport that the moment they get an injury and they can't practice the sport anymore, they don't know who they are? Or how many artists or how many doctors or how many, like, the moment they can't do the skill or the work that they were supposed to do, they're like, who am I? What am I supposed to do? People forget who they are. And I think you and I and everybody else falls into the same trap that our identities are so tied up around what we do, what we work for, that we forget that that's just what we do. It's not who we are. Who we are is far deeper, far more meaningful, far more significant. A person that picks up garbage every day, that picks up the rubbish in the street, has the same powerful identity as the minister at church. Sure. The same identity. They're no different. And we disregard the person picking up the rubbish and we elevate this minister, this teacher on Instagram. But they have the same image-bearing identity. And neither of them is tied up to what they do. What they do is just an expression of that identity, but it's not who they are.
Sure. So who are we then?
Well, the Bible says that in the beginning, we were created in God's image, right? Genesis 1, verse 26. So I think we are image-bearing, humans. Humans that are created to bear the image of God. We are God's masterpiece. We are God's chosen instrument to reveal to the world who he is. We are created with incredible significance and incredible purpose, tied up on this idea that we are bearing God's image. So I don't know. There's many ways to say this, but sure. I'm choosing to stick to the one in Genesis 21:26.
Sure. And I don't ask, you know, I'm not asking these questions facetiously. I'm asking them genuinely because I think the identity of humanity is in question at the moment. I mean, you see it in politics. Yeah. You see it in politics covers the kind of racial and injustice mm-hmm. conversation, right? Mm-hmm. That people, that's an identity issue. The other identity issue is gender and sexuality and the fluidity or non-fluidity of that. Yeah. That's becoming major. You mentioned careers. That becoming our identity. I would also say relationship status. Married, not married, and then now I've realized even within the married section, it's like, oh, kids or no kids, you know. That becomes a conversation. And somehow we tie ourselves to these identities, and I'm trying to understand, you know, from your perspective. Again, this is all conversations. Nothing's. I just want people to know we're talking. It's not. This is the. Jared said it, now it's for everyone. No, okay, this is what Jared understands it to mean. But you're saying to me, okay, my identity is to bear God's image, but an expression of my identity is what I do for a living. My expression of my identity is what it is that happens here or there.
Yeah.
So how do I, and I know we talked about Sabbath, I'm going to go back to Sabbath here in a bit, but how do I notice if I'm allowing the one identity to overtake the other? So if I'm allowing my, you know, my fight for justice, genuine, I think that's a great fight.
Great fight.
How do I know that that has not overcome this idea of, man, I am meant to bear God's image?
I think this is exactly why Sabbath has become so important to me. Mm-hmm. Because chances are, without me noticing, they are becoming my identity. Mm-hmm. They are. And I don't even notice it until it's already too far gone that I'm like, oh, whoa, all of a sudden. So Sabbath has become an incredible reminder, because every Friday night, my wife and I switch off our phones, do a little ceremony, a little kind of ritual that we do every week. We make some prayers and we remind ourselves of, like, man, what is our identity? Because otherwise it's so easy to fall into it. Like you said, like, people who have kids, they've been raising and loving these kids for who knows how long, that by the time they leave, the kids finally leave their house, the parents are like, what do we do now? Like, because you spend genuine, loving, kindly, having compassion, taking care of these kids for so long, that it's impossible for you not to put your identity there for a little bit.
Sure.
I think in my experience, Remo, I've noticed that my identity has been swapped when God takes it away. So when I was in high school, I became a disciple when I was 14. I became a Christian when I was 14. And then at 17, I dated this girl who became my identity, absolutely my identity. She became everything that I was and everything that I did things for. And I didn't even notice. So that when God took her away, I was so heartbroken that I was like, what's going on? I was even mad at God for taking her away.
Sure.
But it was because God knew that my identity was so wrapped around her that he needed to take her away. And so in my experience, God lovingly takes things away so that our identity remains in him. So sometimes it might feel like, oh, why didn't I get this job? Or why didn't I get this placement at this school or at this university? Or why am I still single? Or why am I, like, all of, like, it feels like God is not giving us the things he wants. And it might be, in my experience, that God is doing that so that we remain in him and our identity remains in him. Sure. Because if he did give us those things, we would lose it. We would fall so trapped of those things. And I think you're right. Relationships are one of the biggest ones. And I know it's really easy for me to say because I'm married.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of single people are like, what are you talking about? But I promise you, like, the idolatry of relationships and putting our identity in a relationship is so big. So big that I just wish that anybody that listens to and is single realizes you're complete, you're full, you are God's bearing image. Everything you do, you don't need a partner.
Yeah.
You don't need a spouse to be able to do that.
Yeah. And I know this is a definite left turn, but I want to ask, do you feel like to some extent the church has caused some of that?
On the short answer or the long one?
Yes, both.
Yeah, I think so. I think we have caused some of it. I think we put this pressure on young people. Are like, why are you not going out on a date? Or who do you like? Or have you thought about this? Just like you put pressure on young marriages to have kids like this.
Yeah, sure.
It's always like we're asking people to get to the next level as if there was levels of this.
Yeah.
So I think we're definitely part of the problem. And I think we need to do some repenting in that. And if people want to be like Timothy or like Paul and remain single for the rest of their lives and truly serve the Lord, and they have the gift to do that, amen, we should celebrate that.
Mm-hmm.
We should allow young men and women who are single to be able to lead in some spaces, because they might be called to lead without a spouse, without a partner.
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes we don't give space for those people, and it kind of always gives the idea that unless you're married, you're not able to serve in this way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny we go into that, because I saw something recently, and you know, the person was, this was a brief quote, really popular person, so people might have seen it. But basically, their point was, their statement was, you know, Jesus was single, Paul was single, and, you know, the New Testament is pretty much the two of them, like, main story, right? And the person was like, so why do you feel like you need to be married? Like, you know, and they were in a married position, and so some of the comments were, oh, you can tell me that. You know, people who felt like, listen, I'm single and it sucks. Which I think, hey, amen. I don't want to be the person who says it shouldn't, or it should. I don't know that. But what I thought was interesting was that stance. And then someone in the comments, and this is where this thought came up, was, but it's the church that's perpetuated it. It's because I've been in the church all my life, and in the church it's always seemed like marriage get preferential treatment. And so I now pursue marriage. And then the dialogue ended up going to a point of idolatry. So I appreciate that you said that. But what it brings up for me is this wrestle that I think a lot of young people are having of deconstruction of faith, because they feel like, man, the church has perpetuated and said things and maybe somewhat explicitly, or sometimes implicitly, like, oh, we're not going to say it out loud like that, but we're going to do things that make this thing seem to be true. And that can put, you know, people in all sorts of awkward places. And so if you had to kind of think about, you know, maybe you even know people who've deconstructed their faith and are taking it apart and trying to figure out, man, how do I reconcile having a faith in God and in the Bible, even though I see a lot of these stuff that I feel like aren't right, kind of how would you help that person to say, hey, you know, the church is going to mess up, but there's hope.
Yeah, I hear you. Even the term deconstructing, I feel like, man, we have to be very, very careful with that. Mm-hmm. Because if you're only deconstructing, all you are left with is a pile of rubbish. Mm-hmm. You have to deconstruct in order to construct better. Mm-hmm. You have to tear things down in order to build better things up. Mm-hmm. So if all I'm doing is deconstructing my faith, I'm gonna be left alone with no faith. I gotta deconstruct in order to be able to build a very, very, very healthy faith. So even the fact that you used that term, I was like, man, we gotta be careful with that. We gotta be very, very careful with that. Mm-hmm. But I know, and I know people do it because genuinely they felt like certain parts of their faith were not scriptural, didn't come from Jesus, didn't come from the Bible, came from people saying, so you have to remove those parts, and I get it. And I think there's genuine lovers of Jesus who are wrestling with all these questions, and some of them even lose their faith on the journey to do that. So I feel for all those men and women. But I would say, how to wrestle with this specific question about singleness and marriage. I think marriage is a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. And the overemphasis, I think, came from a good place. Mm. Because marriage is amazing, and I'm so grateful to be married, and I praise God for my wife every day, and I think it's a beautiful gift. So I think sometimes I fall into that trap because I'm having such a beautiful experience in a God-centered marriage that I just want more people to experience that. So I keep on talking about marriage or about my wife or about things, and I'm almost in a way putting this picture that ideal is marriage. Yeah. And I don't want to do that. But my heart is genuine. I'm just trying to share genuinely what I'm positively experiencing. But maybe a thing that we could do is to put those voices out there who say, hey, marriage is great, and really lift out their voices. And in the same light, lift out the voices who are saying singleness is awesome. Mm. Being single with God is an amazing, beautiful journey. And hold them with the same esteem and the same value, and given the same amount of screen time or audio time or platform time, so that people feel like, oh, whichever I go, God is there. Yeah. I can remain single and God will be there. I can be married and God will be there. Being single without God is devastating. It's totally horrible. It's lonely. It's terrible. You feel totally like nobody loves you. Mm-hmm. Being married without God is devastating. It's terrible. Marriage without God in the center is just a bunch of difficulties rising up. So I think we should just emphasize the God in whatever stage we're in. Wow. Married, single, parent, grandparent, great-grandparent, whatever stage, put God in there and focus on that.
Sure. That's so good. That takes me back to kind of you gotta faith your practices, not just practice your faith, right? Like it's all kind of coming full circle. So I do want to go back and say, okay, so we've spoken about how Sabbath is there, to help us kind of to use your term, to rewire our identity, to kind of reshape and figure and go back to really what it should be, a greater emphasis on who it is that God calls us to be and who he says that we are. But how does one practice Sabbath? I mean, I'm working and I'm talking about the person who I'm working a 9-to-5 Monday through Friday. Try to be involved in my church, and so I do some things in the evening, but also do some things over weekends with the church and Sundays church, you know. I love my sports, so I watch Manchester United and I watch a little bit of Formula One. And I try to be healthy, so I go on long runs in the morning. I just feel like my life is busy. How do I practice Sabbath?
Yeah. Okay. So this might take us on a left turn, so let me know if you want to go this way. Sure. I think sometimes church activities get in the way of Sabbath. And I think
all views from this point on, actually the whole episode has been Jared's views. No, I'm kidding. Okay, interesting. Yeah, let me know. Why do you say that?
I think shame. I've met some people who are so devoted to Jesus, and they feel like the best way to express their devotion to Jesus is to do every church activity possible, involved in every ministry possible, serve in every way possible. And these people are exhausted. They're exhausted of church activities that they can't even live out as disciples. I remember the life of church activities, of every night being so busy, mm-hmm. that I actually don't even have a night where I can invite a friend for a meal and show them hospitality and talk about life, and maybe in the conversation bring out Jesus. Mm-hmm. Like, there was something church was doing every night that I couldn't do the one thing that, especially in our church tradition, Remo, we're called to do, which is make disciples.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, it was so busy that we couldn't do that. And it's not fair, like you said, for people that work 8-to-5, to expect them to do every night something, it is just an unhealthy rhythm of life. Jesus didn't even do that himself. I think most people have this assumption that Jesus was like always on a go. But when we read the Gospels, the scholars, don't quote me on this, go fact check it like we were talking about. But some scholars say that in the Gospel together, what we have is about 30-something days of Jesus's actual life.
Wow.
Of 3 years of ministry, we have about 30-something days in 4 Gospels. I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
So this go, 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 go that we read in Jesus sometimes is unrealistic. Jesus took breaks.
Yeah.
You and I talked about one recently in John chapter 10 where Jesus goes away, and that phrase goes away could imply weeks, if not months, where Jesus was just connecting with God.
Sure.
Paul took a 3-year break. We often hear about Paul going on mission over, but he took a 3-year, almost like sabbatical education of trying to catch up with the other apostles on what they knew about Jesus. Yeah. So I think it's just unrealistic to expect people that love Jesus, that work very hard, to all of a sudden be involved in every church activity possible, and to condemn them for not being there.
Mm-hmm.
To be like, oh, why were you not on here for our midweek kind of like service? Or why were you not here for our small group on Thursday? Or why didn't you come help out with the youth and family ministry on the weekend? Like, man, this poor guy, this poor girl has a life full of stuff. One night where they can focus on their relationship with God. Or if they're married, focus on their marriage, or focus on their kids. I mean, we advocate married people to have date nights, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we not having a date night with our Lord? Why are we not having that intentional time? And I know we say quiet time is that, and I'm grateful that we all read our Bibles and we pray every day. But there's just something different when you go out on a date night, when you intentionally try. Like, I can have a date night with my wife here and watch a Netflix movie, and it'll be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can go out somewhere, maybe dress up a little bit, or do something fun that we both enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. And it's just a different connection that I have with her than if we stayed at home and did the regular thing every day.
Yeah.
So Sabbath for me has become that like weekly date night that I know I'm looking forward to God. And like I said earlier, Remo, it is inconvenient. Mm-hmm. You have to put some things aside. You're not going to please people. Some people are going to be like, but if it is what you need to do for your relationship with God to be close, connected, and healthy, I say do it. And then the best thing about Sabbath, Remo, is that it's not scripted. There's nothing that you have to do. You get to choose it. So if you like running, go on a long run, but run it with God. And that can be your Sabbath. If you like watching the soccer match, watch the soccer match, man. Enjoy it. And just invite God to that. I give myself some guidelines that help me. So maybe it will help other people. But Sabbath for me is reading. I read a lot. I read my Bible. I read other books. I spend a lot of time reading. But it's also recreation. Mm-hmm. I do things that I enjoy. Mm-hmm. Things that are fun for me. Sure. Sometimes that's playing FIFA. So I play FIFA. Sometimes that's hanging out with other people. So I hang out with other people. Mm-hmm. Like reading, recreation, resting. That's the next thing that I do. I make sure that there's no thing that I'm expected or a deadline that I have to meet. Like it's a time for resting. So I put all of those things away. So reading, recreation, and resting. Those are kind of my guidelines. It might be for some other people differently, but do something fun. Do something that brings you some sort of rest and joy and peace. And do something that makes you connect with God. For me, it's reading. For some other people, it might be singing or walking or talking. I don't know. Whatever it is. It's not scripted.
Come on. Oh, dude, this has been a great conversation. I mean, wide-ranging. I feel like, we got to some of the questions that I sent you beforehand. Others of them, it is what it is. We'll have to have you back again. But I'm interested to know, what do you feel like are some of the major things that you see young people wrestling with in life and in faith?
Sure, that's a good question, Remo. I think some of the issues that I wish we could talk about a little bit more, you mentioned some of them. It's just justice. I definitely think the church hasn't, in my opinion, hasn't responded too well to issues of injustice and of oppression, especially racial things. So young people are wrestling with that because they feel like their friends from varsity or their colleagues at work are doing far more to help and to change the system than the church is. And they feel like the church should be. So they're wrestling with that and they're like, why don't you care? I definitely think that's one of the biggest issues. I think something you also mentioned before is sexuality and kind of like this gender fluidity thing. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of young people are wrestling with like, okay, so what does the Bible actually say about that? And what is my response to that? Can I go to my friend's wedding? They're gay, they're lesbian, they're whatever. Can I go to their wedding? Is that being a good disciple or is that not being a good disciple? And people are like, what do I do with all of that? They have no, there's no answer to that, it seems like. So people are like trying to wrestle with that. Mm-hmm. And I think, in general, over the past 2 years, I think people have been wrestling with just church. In like things went online, things went like back to meeting and people are not sure if it's safe and people are not sure if the vaccination is safe. So just all of these issues come like around the pandemic have exposed our faith and created some questions that I don't think we had before.
Sure.
And there's many other things, but that's some of the main things that come to my mind at the moment.
Sure. And with broad strokes, because we're not going to talk, and we can, if you want to come back on the podcast, we can drill into those. But with broad strokes, how would you say people can navigate that faithfully? And maybe I'll give you some backdrop to so that you can have 30 seconds more to think about your answer.
Thank you.
Is what I'm finding is a lot of us are wrestling with this stuff, and everybody is somewhat doing something, right? Other guys are swinging from the hip, and I've seen that, and I've even had to have conversations with people to say, relax, okay? The truth is, the justice issue, for example, the truth is the justice issue has been an issue. Now that you're woke to it, doesn't now all of a sudden mean you better change now, otherwise you're leaving the church. That's not a fair assertion. Now, I'm not saying don't have a feeling about it. I'm just saying let's also be gracious and understand that this is, you were also in the dark at some point, you know, so that's that sort of thing. So everybody's reacting differently, but my hope and the goal of the podcast is to see young people thrive in life as well as in their faith, which means they've got to stay faithful, which means somehow they've got to keep navigating some of these hard situations and hard things that they're wrestling with well. And so that's where the question comes from is what are some, big picture practices or practical thoughts or ideas that you think, man, hey, try lean towards this to have a great balance of grace and truth, or whatever balance you feel like would help people to be able to keep journeying forward faithfully.
I think that's such a hard question. Such a hard question to be able to speak in broad strokes. I think each of these issues is different. Mm-hmm. So I think I would have a broad stroke that is different from each issue. So for example, you mentioned the justice issue. Yeah, it's been an issue. It's been an issue for a long time, and some people just got woken up to it recently. But there's some people that have been awake for this for a long time. And in their small little way, they've been trying to do something, and they're tired of being the only one in their church community that is aware of these things.
Yeah.
So I think those kind of people have a genuine discontent and a wrestle that they have with their church community, because they feel like, oh, it became news last year, so all of a sudden you care about it. Mm-hmm. But for the past 10 years, I've been telling you, please care about this issue, and you have disregarded me. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, yo, like that person, I feel for that person. And I don't know what the answer to that is, Remo, honestly. I think how to navigate these things faithfully is, it's hard. It's so, so hard. I am a big, big believer in we can listen to God's voice. I know we've spoken about that before, you and I, of spending time in silence and getting attuned to his tone of voice, to the words that he uses, and to really help him communicating with us in our everyday life. Mm-hmm. So I would start there, is make sure you're listening to God clearly. Mm-hmm. Because he will help you navigate that faithfully. And if that means having some serious conversations, have them. If that means being a little bit more patient and be compassionate, be patient and be compassionate. So I would say that. And I think all the other kinds of issues, I think it kind of applies the same. Just be very attuned to God's voice. But that's a totally different conversation. How do you become attuned to God's voice? That's a very big question that I think it needs to be answered.
Sure.
I think we really need to develop, as Christians, as followers of Jesus, the skill of learning to listen to God. It's not all just quiet time. It's not just all just instruction. It's not just a step-by-step instruction manual. It's actually a relationship. It's a conversation. So the more we become attuned to that and aware of his voice in our everyday lives, we'll be able to navigate all of these issues and all these wrestles a little bit better. Sure. But that's hard. That's very hard.
That it is. Brother, this has been good. I think you've left enough question marks for everybody that we're definitely going to have you back on the podcast here in another number of months. Maybe we'll make this a yearly check-in with Jarrett as sure. You know, part of the schedule of the podcast. Just honestly, I feel like Jarrett, I thoroughly enjoy the offline conversations we have. I'm grateful that we get to bring a lot of those things into online platforms and things, because I do think it's important. I do think there's massive wrestling that's going on, and I feel like you are one of those people in my peer age group that is really wrestling deeply, not on a shallow or superficial level, with the day and age that we live in, because you truly do desire God and his kingdom to come through you and with you on earth as it is in heaven. And I'm just so grateful for your example. I'm grateful for the man of God that you are, the husband that you are, and especially the friend that you are to me. It's selfish, but very, very, very grateful for you. And dude, I want to end where I end with everybody. I want to ask you to please give the people what they're looking for. What would you like to say in closing to help young people thrive in life as well as in their faith?
First of all, you're too kind. I'm really grateful, and I'm really happy to be here, and I'll be honored to be here another time if you guys wish. And you are a great friend, Remo. You really, really are. So all these questions that you're asking, I'm wondering how you're answering them. And, and I would love to hear your answer as well. I'll be like, that'd be another podcast. Maybe I'll interview you next time and hear your thoughts. Because this is hard stuff that you're talking about. What would I like to leave people with, Remo? We spoke a lot about Sabbath and rhythms, and I think that has been a life changer for me. So I would say to any person that is listening to this, God has a rhythm for your life that is totally different from sometimes from the rhythms that we are so accustomed to. That if you learn to live in his rhythm of rest and work, of out and in, of up and down, and just really, really learn to listen to his voice and go in that pace that he sets for us, that it's not too fast, but it's not too slow, that keeps you walking forward, I really believe you'll thrive in life and faith. I really believe you'll experience joy and peace and goodness, and your relationship with God will feel like a joy and not like a burden. It will feel like this is what you want to do for the rest of your life, not because you have to do so you can go to heaven. No. It will feel like, oh man, this is what I want every day. Find that rhythm. Find that voice. That will help you thrive in life and faith. And I can almost hear the question, how do I do that? And that's why you listen to this podcast. This podcast is helping you answer that question. How do you do that?
Yeah, major pressure on the podcast, Jared. Thank you so much, my friend. Appreciate the time.
I appreciate you. Thanks, man.
Hey, quick one. While listening to this episode, I just want to remind you of a partnership with Good Cup. Good Cup is a South African female-owned coffee brand with a mission to provide good coffee while driving community engagement and service. Good Cup also provides coffee truck event services throughout the city of Johannesburg for special occasions. So if you are having a wedding, an event, or a conference that you require coffee for, please email them at goodcupbrand@gmail.com. And if you love coffee, like I do, then the great news for you is that this partnership allows you to get a discount on any single origin coffee purchase that you make on their website. And all you have to do is type in the discount code FAITH, F-A-I-T-H, FAITH, on checkout, and it will apply to your purchase. So please go check them out. We'll have links to the business in the show notes. Enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Thank you for listening. For more thought-provoking conversations, subscribe to the Rima Tlale Life and Faith Podcast. Please like, review, and share so that we can continue to help others thrive in their life as well as in their faith.